With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
To the Derek Zoolander Centre for Children Who Can't Read Good and Want to Learn to Do Other Good Stuff Too. I'm your host, Derek Zoolander, and joining me tonight is fake Gary Neville and, of course, Dean Lizzie. How are we all? Welcome along to the Winners and Losers podcast this week. It's great to have you all along. Where am I going? Yeah, so I'm hosting this week. Gav has decided to take a day off because he's still sobering himself up after Saturday's golf event spectacular that raised lots of money for Failicon that's out there. Yeah, somebody's asked, am I still doing my makeup? Yeah, there'll be somebody along quite soon to do my eyelashes and also my lips as I get ready for the weekend. Tonight we're going to focus on winners and losers, which is the focus of the show, hence why we named it. Although for that epic intro, I don't know what else to do. So, Ray Dickinson, how are you?
I'm okay. Massively distracted by the Australia versus Peru penalty shootout, which has just finished.
Does that count?
That was the last World Cup spot that was up for grabs, and Australia won the shootout 5-4. So there you go. They're the last ones in.
And that's why you're late. So you can tell all the listeners. You didn't come on because you were watching a game of football. Phenomenal. Right. Peace. Great to see you. How are you getting on, fella?
Good to see you, brother. Good to see you. Rocking that 1989 Guns N' Roses headband, loving it, absolutely loving it.
It's this year's fashion. The 80s are back. That's all you have to remember.
You never left.
Seems luck, is it?
I tell you now, I have a massive cut in my head, so I'm just covering it up that way. I got it. No. Right, what are we going to talk about today, this week, the whole lot? I've got loads to talk about towards the back end of the show because the War Games is approaching very fast and very soon, and that's the most important thing. So that's why I'm hosting tonight, because I couldn't be arsed with winners and losers. There's been lots of international football. The only thing I wanted to talk about, I'm not allowed to talk about, so I'm not going to talk about it. So what I'm going to do first is go to my main man, Gary Neville, tonight. Gary, what's your winner for the week?
I've been corrected. Apparently, there's one more World Cup spot up for grabs. so there you go. The eagle. There's always one eagle-eyed viewer, isn't there? Who's ready to pull you up? Anyway,
there's 70 teams in the World Cup this year. I think FIFA made a new rule. 70 teams.
What were you asking for? My winner.
Yeah. Give us your winner. Go on.
Well, my winner is. Darwin Nunes, a.k.a. The new Andy Carroll, potentially, as we were discussing beforehand, Phil.
You robbed my thunder. I'm devastated, mate. Devastated.
I'll, I'll park that, but I'll start with Darwin Núñez. Look, he's become the new poster boy in some ways, hasn't he, for us? I mean, people absolutely mad for this transfer, drawn out over the course of about, 5 days. There was no let up in the tweets. There was a little bit of a twist and turn towards the end in Man United's sort of tenuous links there, and a lot of people have had a lot of fun with that, just by making that choice to reject Man United alone is good enough reason to call them a winner, because who'd really want to go to that shit show right now with what's going on? Just another indication of the sign of the times, flipping the script completely on the likes of Man United now, you could genuinely see if United come in for a player and we're in there firmly in discussions why, they wouldn't want to go there. No Champions League football, start of a really big rebuild on the horizon. Whereas what he's coming to now is, and you can kind of make, it's funny in some ways. You could make links to some players who've gone a similar profile, who've gone, big reputation in one of the sort of not the top tier leagues in Europe, going for big fees to the likes of, say, a West Ham or a Newcastle or something like that. And they're there and they're kind of paraded and they're kind of on a pedestal from day one, needing to perform, needing to bang in goals. The very first appearance is dissected on Match of the Day and all this sort of stuff. Whereas actually what he's coming into is a next step in his career. He's coming into an environment where, he doesn't have to be the main man from day one. We've already got a main man or main men, really, haven't we? We've got, assuming Salah's still there. We've got Luis Diaz. We've got Jota. We've got plenty of a supporting cast for him to be able to be eased in to our squad and to potentially a little bit of a rotation early doors. So, like, he's a big winner. He's going to be adored from day one. I'm not a big fan of these kind of links on social media that I've seen, these pictures of Luis Suarez, who, as you pointed out, Phil, does look like he's now being presented as a ghost. I had to quickly Google, was he actually, you made that comment a few hours ago. I had to do a quick Google just in case something bizarre had happened. But this typical, I mean, it's kind of the funnier side, isn't it, of some of the Liverpool fan base, really. We go to some of the extremes on some of this stuff. But look, it's exciting. We all like the shiny new thing. He is going to be much anticipated. We'll get on to other aspects of his transfer, no doubt, and how much it seems to have kind of really got the opposition fan base wound up over the fees and all this sort of stuff. But the reality is, it's a transfer to get excited about. I'm going to declare it now, and you can probably expand upon it, Phil. There is that nagging doubt in the back of your mind that at some point, we've done so well with these forwards that we've brought in. At some point, the next failure is around the corner. Let's just hope it's not this one. But I'm gonna sit on the optimistic side of the fence for the time being.
Yeah, from what I've seen of him, he looks to be a better player than Andy Carroll, right? But there's no better sight than hindsight. Some people have, but at the end of the day, when Carroll signed, there was all the compilations of the type of goals he was scoring going around that made him out to look like Fernando Torres as well, right? And that's the biggest red flag that went out for me, is the amount of comparisons that went out. There was, look what this fella is. He's the next Torres. He scores all the same goals and he does all the same things and it's the exact same thing. Phenomenal. If it's true, brilliant. Hopefully it is. Hopefully everything goes on. The part for me is every time I see the figure, the shape, everything, and his feet are just miles too big. It's like the one that freaks me out. It's like, when you look at how large his feet are, it's like it's just way too big. It just looks like Krusty the Clown. Do you remember from The Simpsons when they used to stand on the feet was just miles too big? They go, at some stages, you know, strikers have nice little dainty feet so that they can wrap the ball around and all that type of. Suarez has only a size 3, as we know. So it's like it's important to have small dainty feet instead of these large. Now centre halves need to have barges at the end of their legs, right? But centre forwards need to have dainty feet, and it's just I don't know. I'm hoping from what we've seen and what he did in the Champions League, he has that pedigree to continue that going on. But at the end of the day, it's worrying when a Liverpool. I hope he doesn't take the number 9. That's the big thing for me. Don't take the number 9 unless the first thing I'd do if I was Jurgen Klopp. The first thing I'd say to him is, listen, haircut, right? You can have the number 9 jersey,
100% on that.
Cut your hair. Now, if you get rid of the ponytail, you'll do yourself. You can grow it after you score 30 goals in your first season, but just for the next 12 months, cut your hair. You'd be grand, right? And trust me on this one. I'm going to do you a favour here. Go a bit like your man who managed Argentina when Gabriel Batistuta was there and say, no, short hair only, short back and sides, just until you score your first 30 goals. Then you can have whatever haircut you want any then, because you've made your own record and nobody's going to say, he looks a bit like him, doesn't he? Massive, massive, massive platforms. And if you're not sure about him, he's been known to be able to walk on water. That's how big his feet are. Pete, how did you feel?
Two reasons I'm not worried at all. The first reason is, from all of our perspectives, we always watch players who play against Liverpool. He's the one player, I suppose, besides the obvious players like Kevin De Bruyne, who, when they play against us, every time they touch the ball, they look like a threat. When we played against him, I know we were comfortable at stage, but every time we got on the ball against it, I remember just thinking, this looks like a highlight reel. I mean, even the volley at one stage, I remember just thinking, that's ridiculous. And Alisson Becker had to pull off a ridiculous save from behind his own body, which, again, only he's capable of. He gave us, it wasn't just a turn of time, but he just looked like the lads were looking at each other going, we cannot deal with this guy. And It wasn't the same as when we played against Minamino, because Minamino kind of ghosted in against us, a bit like someone like a Lampard does, and that was interesting. But every time this fella got in and around any of us, it was like, we cannot deal with him. That was one reason. The second reason for me is any quote that I've read of top players, fellas who don't really do that much talking, the likes of Luis Suarez turned around and said, the minute he saw him, he went back to Barcelona and went, we have to sign this guy. He didn't turn around and say, oh, this fella has a future and one to watch. He went to his bosses at Barcelona and went, he could be part of what we have done with Neymar, with Messi, with myself now. And anybody who has been quoted as talking about him, I kind of would listen to the likes of guys like that who recommend to other people. And it seems to be a common thread. And the only drawback I've seen is the fact that he's had 2 ACL injuries already for such a young player. But, you know, big lads get growing pains and take knocks. But for me, to be fair,
Pete, I'm glad he has 2 ACLs, because if he didn't, he's going to have a long eye off when he comes in.
yeah, classic. No, man.
I always find it's handy to have 2 ACLs. Yeah,
that's why his medical has taken 24 hours. No, for me, to be fair, I just think those two things, the fact that, like I said, yeah, when there's very few kind of players that I've seen watching football that every time they touch a ball, it looks like a highlight reel. Kevin De Bruyne is one. Leo Messi, peak Leo Messi. Ronaldinho was probably the one that sticks out most in my mind. That every time you watch him play, it's just like a highlight reel. He just used to do everything right. And now him, the night he played against us, and we had them well beaten. But every time they just found him, he's bags of pace. His first touch, he's one of those players who can take a ball over his shoulder. You know that window of opportunity you have, but you wouldn't know Phil being a goalkeeper. The ball comes over your shoulder, you see it for a split second, and you're still able to kill it on the end of your toe. He's one of them. He's one of them. And for me, that with pace, I just think he's going to... Listen, I'm not going to put figures on. I'm not interested in this, him versus Haaland media bullshit. I'm only interested in what he can do for Liverpool. And somebody, a lot of my criticisms of us, particularly if you're watching, I don't want to talk about the Champions League final. Forced touches in the final early, a decisiveness. I just think he might solve that problem, to be quite honest.
I think you're wrong there, Red Steve. He hasn't got 10 toes. He's got 10 small canoes on the size of his feet, right? They're only one-man canoes because they're that big. I've never seen bigger feet in a picture of your life. And it's mainly because of these pictures where they have Suarez floating around like a ghost in the background. It reminded me of those times of where Rodgers used to look up and say, "We're doing a great job, boss." And Bill Shankly used to say, "No."
Yeah, I don't know you. I don't know you.
Who's your man? Who's your man? Fuck off down there.
Get out of my club, you chancer.
Somebody change the number, will you? This fella keeps buzzing me all the time. I'm trying to enjoy myself up here. Wrecking the shop. Piss off, Brendan. Go up to Celtic there, you'd be grand. I think we're all hopeful. Listen, when you go with where we are, and you think of the next phase of our progression. Now, everyone's using evolution. I think it's a great euphemism, given his name is Darwin. I didn't see that one coming at all. I think it's amazing that people have cottoned onto that. Fantastic. Well done. Welcome to when it is. But given where we are, and given that Mane is basically going to bugger off to Bayern Munich off the back of this, right? And when you look at the deal, it probably is costing about 25 million quid when it goes for 40 and we paying 65 in them. Ultimately, this is a great deal. We've replaced Sadio Mane for 25 million. Think about it. That's essentially what we've done here. And he's definitely going through the centre, given the style. It's definitely stylistically, we'll see. I don't think we'll see as big a change as we think, because Mane has been playing more or less through the middle for the last 6 months. So if you think it's not going to put out Diaz, not going to put out Salah, it may give more targets for both Robertson and Trent Alexander-Arnold's crossing, and that can only be a good thing. But the proof is in the pudding, isn't it?
We're in showbiz, baby.
That's on a button, baby. Right, Pete, I'm going straight away to your loser. Let's rock and roll.
Oh, my loser. I had my winner primed and in my head. I suppose my loser, as always, well, I like to pick on the but, you know, opponents in the media and opposing fans who seem to have lost touch with their calculators and are making up random fees, trying to round 64 million euros or pounds rather, up to 100 million pounds. I mean, let's not even get into the mathematics of it. It's just the usual. I mean, listen, to be so desperate, and we'll talk about it more when I'm talking about my winners, to be so desperate to hang that agenda around Klopp. I mean, Jurgen Klopp lives so well at the front of people's minds that anything he says, I mean, he's one of the top coaches in the world. If he wants to say in April 2019 that, or 2016, that the world has gone crazy spending 100 million, he can say it. He can say whatever he wants as long as he keeps producing on the pitch. It's amazing to think that there's absolutely nothing to hang around Liverpool at all, other than what Jurgen Klopp says, and then it might appear that he's moving slightly 4 years later, or 5 years later, even 6 years later, with the times, and actually having to concede that you have to invest a little money that you've earned yourself, you know, through a fantastic transfer, a team that we have, and a fantastically run club. But I'm not into, as you know, Phil, like yourself, I'm not into the transfer madness. I actually like football. There's a lot of people out there that prefer, you know, the football for them is the transfer window. For me, it's not. I just can't wait to get back into the green and watch that. But I do enjoy watching opponents in the media, former opponents, absolutely squirm. And it was funny watching Simon Jordan make a point that, you know, probably be the only one over the last 48 hours to make any sense, to talk about, listen, lads, let's get back to reality here. This club is the most effectively run financial institution probably in Europe, if not the world. They're spending what they've earned. And by the way, their net spend is less than 25% of what, you know, Manchester City's and you know, the big oligarchs oil rig clubs are. So, I know that boiled a lot of piss as well. It just seems that Liverpool seem to be distancing their opponents. And that's why I'm calling them losers, distancing all of our opponents from the realities of what's going on. They look at what's going on and they just add 30% tax or 40% tax just to suit the agenda. And I love the fact that it really bothers them. Look, I love the fact that Nunes has been talked about for a long time. they all know the ins and outs of the Haaland deal, that before you even sit down and talk to Haaland, you have to put, you had to have put 30 million quid in his father's back pocket, you know, probably another 30 million in his agent's back pocket, then have the conversation.
Pete, I'm going to stop you. I'm going to stop you there, right? Because, and the reason I'm going to stop you is, right, you start this, that everyone's boiling piss and making up numbers and stuff like this, right? Then you've ended up doing the exact same thing.
No, I'm not making it up. I said,
Hang on. I was with you when you said about make up numbers and people trying to make up numbers, right? And the make up numbers just starts on the internet when a transfer is being signed because somebody wants to break with how much it's going to cost, right?
It's a good point, Phil, but do you not listen?
But you made up numbers there. They made up numbers.
Listen, probably.
If you want to go on a stats podcast, I can sort that for you, but you're not making up numbers on this one.
I don't think it was cheap to have a conversation with Haaland's father, his agent, and Haaland himself. Listen, I don't know what the numbers are, but I can't imagine that it's...
You just made it up!
I didn't make it. I don't know what the numbers are, but I can't imagine that it would have been cheap. Listen, it could be a billion euros, but I can't imagine that it would have been cheap.
Apparently it's 51 for Haaland. Apparently it's 51 million for the fee, and 34 million to the agent and his old man. So that comes up to 85. But obviously it's reported by, you know, from a pure transfer point of view, 51 million isn't going to get you even close to probably what the top 10 transfer fees.
Yeah, Ray. I mean, I look at Spain. I look at what the clubs here that were at the table. I mean, Barcelona pulled out pretty early. It was reported in the...
Are you going to make up more numbers now? No, it was reported in the market.
I can only tell you that they weren't at the table.
In www.mercato.com, was it?
No, I'm just telling you that La Marca, who are pretty usually on the ball when it comes, not figures.
Get up the yard, La Marca. I mean,
they're usually on the ball. If Barcelona are involved in something, they'll know. If they're not involved, and they knew a couple of months before that Barcelona were out, I don't know what the figures are, neither did they. But only apparently Real Madrid and Manchester City were still at the table. So my point is, Liverpool have done their business, have done their plan, and we'll talk about that later. With a lesser offer to a player like Nunes, and got him in the bag. And I just think, instead of looking at the fact that the fella has expressed a desire to play for us, they've just flipped and that's 100 million quid. So that's it. Liverpool have spent 100 million quid. And I love the fact that we've actually distanced our rivals from reality. You know, that they've just gone out and they're just throwing numbers around and all of a sudden it's a 100 million pound transfer.
Ray, do you want to make up some transfer fees just for the crack?
Yeah. What's the title? Isn't it made up fees?
Yeah, and you can just make them up, and then you can say they're real. You can give it when people make them up, and then say they're real, right? And then say somebody else's are real, once it's not a Liverpool player. Go on, make something up.
Well, a fella called Paul on Twitter here is giving me some pretty concrete sort of numbers to go by, so I'll just regurgitate those, shall I? The reality is the fee reported for Haaland is considerably less than what is reported for Nunes. The funny thing about Nunes that everyone's now going with is reporting the fee, including the add-ons. There was a thing up on Sky earlier which thrust... Asterisk. Yeah, the asterisks. They finally managed to put asterisks next to Liverpool. They've been wanting to do it for years with that league that we won. Well, they managed to get an asterisk next to Darwin Nunes' name because they've already factored in the bonuses, which presumably are so easy to earn. It must be, I don't know, wear a red shirt 10 times, get on the Liverpool bus 5 times and shake Jurgen Klopp's hand. I mean, the stuff that's going on is just, is laughable. The reality is Liverpool are running a far more sustainable model, self-sustainable model, sorry, as opposed to what Manchester City are doing. When you factor in all the wages, this is the other important thing here. Mane is obviously going off to Bayern Munich to earn substantially more money than he would have earned at Liverpool, substantially more money than we're ever going to be prepared to do under the wage structure. And we've got Darwin Núñez in on a wage that, well, I'm sure, I think it's something like, I'll make it up. I think it's something in the region of about 160 grand a week, something of that nature. Yeah.
That's right.
according to some other fella on Twitter, who's not verified, but I think he's got at least 1,000 followers. So. So we'll take that as gospel at this point. But yeah, we've stayed within the wage structure. Let's not forget we've got a negotiation still ongoing with Mohamed Salah, who really, of the two, he's the one that you want to, you know, push most of your chips in to try and save from leaving the club. So we've had to go about this in a way of evolving the team. And look, at the end of the day, the whole thing around the opposition fan base is comical, to be honest with you. It absolutely is. For some reason, whenever it comes to a Liverpool transfer, it gets the most of attention out of anyone. And it was quite ironic that they released the Haaland video today of all days, just as we're in the process of doing the final bits and bobs to secure Núñez. Phil's laughing his head off.
I'm just like, right, so there's three things. I thought the original topic was good because it comes down to the fact that people just make up fees to suit their agendas, right? Then Pete goes off on a mad one and starts making up fees to suit his agenda, right? So I didn't even need to go into this at all. Like, I could save an explanation on this, right?
We are
looking at the comments.
The difference is fair.
Hang on, Pete. Looking at the comments, and Núñez is getting anything from £3 and a packet of potato a week to £400,000 a week and Haaland's packet of potato, right? So and ultimately, all these numbers and all these fees are made up by fan bases as an agenda item, even if it's subconscious, to legislate the position they're in. The only reason the transfer fee is being paid any heed to at all is because we've been held up as this example of a club who's doing it on a sustainable manner and building and building and building success and using techniques to identify strong players coming up and coming. And this seems to break with that model, but it doesn't. It's a continuation. But hang on, Pete. We spent 70-odd million on Van Dijk. We spent loads of money on Alisson. We spent loads of money on Fabinho when we were building the spine of the team. We spent big when we've needed to spend big, and we always have. We just don't spend big every single season because we believe there's value that's out there, and this doesn't break with it. Every time I come back to this fee, I'm going, when you break it down, we knew we were losing Mane. Because there's obviously been an agreement before the end of the season, right? They've lined it up. I know we're going to talk about succession in a second, but they've lined it up and they've done this the right way. And what they've done with this is they've made the fee that work for the club. So whatever way this is and whatever they're prepared to spend, it fits in with the blanket of money they expect to spend across the course of the summer. And in reality, in the same way we talk about Haaland getting £500,000 a week, 20 million for opening his car door, flying in two hairdressers to live with him to keep his locks free for the game of football, we do the exact same thing to fit our agenda because we want to say that they're sports washing and they're sports washing the world and they'll go mad. And even if they do something right, we just want to see the wrong that's in everything. And you look at United, you know what you're saying? Nah, we're right not to spend 95 million, billion, zillion euro on Darwin Núñez. So what we're going to do is we're going to take that money and Frankie de Jong come in here for 75 million euro. And we're going to say it's 75 million pound. And somebody else is going to say it's 90 million pound. So Harry Maguire is no longer the most expensive player in the United squad. And that's exactly what's going to happen. And we're all going to make up the fees. And that's the end of our topic.
We're in showbiz, baby.
We're rolling this along. So, P, your winner.
Yeah. Succession planning at Liverpool Football Club. You touched on it 50 seconds ago, and you're absolutely right. And it's funny, you know, that I hark back to the Buvac moment when everybody was like, Klopp's going to fall apart, Buvac is gone, you know, and all of a sudden, you know, we're looking at Klopp's number two, and we're thinking, you know, this fella, this Linders, you know, people aren't talking about Steven Gerrard, and they're talking about, if Klopp has to go, this guy's ready to take over. You know, and then a year ago, up to 6 months ago, Michael Edwards was like, what would we do without Michael Edwards? And all of a sudden, Julian Ward seems to have stepped in. Now, I know there was a continuity plan, a good handover between the two. It's not like all of a sudden you're shite, you're old news and you're a shiny new thing. But that's all part of succession planning. You can only compare that, compare and contrast actually with what happens at Manchester United, you know, with you know, their commercial director and how bloody well stupid he is. It just seems to, even on the on and off the park, it just seems to work. I mean, everyone's having a panic. Listen, the only player I genuinely panic about when he has to leave is Mohamed Salah, because I just think the guy just covers so many bases, not just goals, you know, that I genuinely worry about. You know, people will only really genuinely miss him if and when he goes. And even at that, I think he'll be professional right up to the end. In fact, even if he makes his decision at the end of this preseason, I think you'll still see unbelievable guns out, you know, Mohamed Salah, because he's just a machine. But I trust Klopp. And I think it's funny, Ray and I, you and I, Ray, often have this thing on Twitter from time to time. You see people having a panic, and I just say, guess what I'm going to do? I'm just going to trust Klopp. You know, because I'd be honest with you, I'd stick my hand up in the air when Klopp came in first. And I'll tell you, I remember we were beating that Bournemouth, I think 4-3 in a game we should have won about 5-2. And I remember thinking, I remember saying to anyone that would listen, this guy Jurgen Klopp just has one dance. He just goes all guns out attack, and there's just no tactical planning behind it. And then over the next 6 months, he just proceeded to make me look even more stupid than I already do. So from then, I just went, I'm just going to trust this guy. No matter what he's thinking, you know, if someone has to go, they have to go. If he thinks there's, I don't know, if there's a there's somebody with the potential to upset the apple cart, albeit over money or whatever else, they have to go. And whatever he brings in, you know, on the pitch, it'll be okay. The same with Michael Edwards. Michael Edwards, for me, a phenomenon. But at the end of the day, now we're seeing, in the early days, we're seeing Julian Ward has obviously paid attention to the handover. And like anything, it's just another sign that Liverpool is just a machine of a club. It needed to be, you know, if you think of the state we were in back in 2012, 13 and 14, it needed to be, you know, refit top to bottom. It has been, but it's not just that. What they haven't done for me is they haven't went, okay, we're successful now, let's just make it up as we go along. It's always about tomorrow. It's everything just seems to be, it's never about today. It's like, okay, next, what's next, what's next? And I think that's the difference between us and others. It's, you know, with other clubs, I just don't see the tomorrow plan. And with us, you can see, you know, with the young lad that's come in from Fulham, even with some of the kids that they seem to be nicking from academies here, there and everywhere, a kid from Stoke, this kid that they're looking at from Aberdeen, it just seems to me that it's all about tomorrow. So I've never been more relaxed. And I really think, you know, the succession planning at Liverpool, certainly over the last six, seven years, it's just been fantastic, and long may it continue.
Dico, before I cross over, I just want to, you know, Pete mentions the players, but the Edwards to Julian Ward transition is potentially the biggest part of any succession planning we've done. And the outcome of that actually sets the tone for the next 10 years. How big in your mind is that? Is that element? I know Sam put it there, but like how big in that mind? Like, we're seeing this is Julian Edelman. Julian Edelman is this suddenly in terms of what's there. How big is the now this succession of Michael Edwards to Julian Ward? How big is it that this is just a continuation and an improvement on what was there before? And if we look at his first couple of moves, we've got Ricardo Carvalho coming in from Fulham. We've got Darwin Nunez that's coming in as well. And then we've got this kid, Calvin Ridley, or whatever his name is, that's coming in from Aberdeen Falcons. Oh,
20 million.
Calvin Harris is coming in as backup right back on 26 million quid a game. But how important is this part of the succession plan? Not just about the players going out and the players coming through, but all the movements that are going on within the club and within the club's hierarchy and structure.
Yeah, I mean, you know, there was a little bit of panic when Michael Edwards kind of announced his departure, and he's been like the darling, hasn't he, of the LFC fan base for a good few years now. So understandably, a bit of worry about that. you know, his success has come in, as Pete said, it seems like there's been a proper kind of sort of phased sort of handover and whatnot here. It's being handled in a very kind of thought out manner. It's not just, you know, he's announced he's leaving, he's straight out the door, doesn't want anything to do with the club anymore. I mean, you made a kind of American football reference there by accident, but it's interesting because, you know, you like I feel follow American football, and you know, the one thing, the team that I follow in the NFL, which reached the Super Bowl this year, the one person that keeps getting mentioned time and time again is their head of player personnel. They don't actually have a general manager. They have a head of player personnel, and he is one of the biggest key ingredients to how, you know, a franchise like that has been sort of turned around on its head and is heading in the right direction. And you can see how it could be sustained for many, many years to come. So the players are obviously the ones that we see on the pitch and the ones that we get to go and cheer on or otherwise, you know, sort of criticize and whatnot when we go to games. But the likes of the people behind the scenes that are there and working alongside Klopp and who Klopp has to trust are really, really important factors. We all remember the days of the dreaded transfer committee, and it seemed like when there was, you know, five or six opinions being thrown in, decisions were getting, you know, were consistently proven wrong ultimately. Someone was obviously pulling the power and other people were not, you know, there was obviously disagreements there, and maybe there was majorities going on and all this sort of stuff. Whereas you just feel like when we identify and bring in players, whether it's the, you know, the Darwin Nunes end of the scale or the young lads coming in who are the kind of really beginning of the careers, it seems like it's a proper joined up conversation between, you know, someone who's in charge of scouting, you know, the personnel side, the whole kind of background checks. I think the due diligence is there like we've never seen before. And, you know, the manager is clearly an important part of that. So I think they're kind of the overall process that's in place here is up amongst the best, I think, because let's face it, you know, we can, I don't think, the one thing that I think is different for us than Manchester City is we can't afford too many of these, you know, £80 million players to be a mistake. You know, Manchester City bought Jack Grealish last season for £100 million. He's been a flop. Let's say it as it is. You know, they've wasted a hell of a lot of money there. But the thing is, for Manchester City, that's of less importance. They can go again. They can go and spend. They can go and get Haaland. They can go and buy another £100 million player next season. It's not a problem to them. It's important that we hit on these players, and you know, the track records, you know, there for all to see. So you've got to have confidence now and moving into future transfer windows. Last point on it, though, the one thing that really does give me confidence is that we very rarely are seen to be panic buying now. If you think about some of the buys and going back to the Andy Carroll thing and how much of a panic buy that seemed at the time, you know, you think back to that window where we were desperate for a defender, and I'm still convinced that Jurgen Klopp thought he bought the Tottenham Ben Davies, but that's another story altogether. But we didn't go in and panic at that moment. We'd identified someone to bring in, and we waited, and we got Konate, and we've, you know, okay, we scrape by getting into the Champions League, you know, through an Alisson Becker header, probably just an absolute miracle. But we don't go and panic buy anymore. Even when we were in dire straits, we didn't go out and buy someone for the sake of buying them.
Look, As I've been long on record saying, the reason why we've competed is because we've had a phenomenal ability to identify transfers, and that the vast majority of those transfers have worked out. And it's a vast difference to what we've put up with for the best part of 15, 20 years before this. Think of the rotating door that we had when Rafa was there, where, by and large, for two or three seasons, we got the right big signings right, but then they started to wear away as that went on. So we've had the longest spell of transfer success that I can remember as a fan. Since the 80s, and I just don't know. I'll explain the headband to everyone come to the end, so you can all relax now, right? But it's important.
I'm just laughing at that comment. Someone said we should have signed Kabak for 120 million quid.
We did. We spent 120 million loan fee on Kabak, and we gave 40 million in Smarties packets to his uncle, who was mad at the Smarties, and that's how he got him in the first place. But, look, from this, when we talk about succession planning, everything at the moment is working as a machine. Eventually, something is going to get blocked in the cog, something's not going to go right, and we'll have to go back to the drawing board. But I think in this phase, in this evolution, I think Klopp believes that everything is still in place to allow us to continue to compete and continue for this to continue to grow, and that he has the right players in there. Otherwise, he wouldn't have signed an extension. I truly believe he wouldn't have signed an extension if he didn't feel that he was going to be capable of challenging over the next 2 to 3 years in terms of what's there. And I think this is the next part of this, right? It's the next stage in what's going on. He knew he had to do a squad refresh. This is it. We talked about at some stage the front three would have to be rotated, moved around. And they've been gradually doing that. Luis Diaz is one of those pieces. Jota is one of those pieces. And then we have Nunes coming in, who's obviously another part of this piece that says, right, if Mane goes, we have three new fellas instead of one, right? Now we still have Salah. We have at least Salah for another season. That allows them to go and identify. Do we want another Salah, or do we want something completely different again? Do we want something very, very different to what Salah is? Because Nunes in shape is very different to what Mane is.
We're in showbiz, baby.
We are in showbiz indeed tonight. Right, last formal topic of the evening. And if anybody has any other topics about my headband and the fact that I look like somebody's nanny, Olivier's nanny, and everyone has done well, that's fantastic. Garrett Lawson's worried about me, but he should know what I was like growing up. We'll come back to that at the end. You're all waiting for the IP vanish drugs. this makes sense. Anyway, Ray. Your loser of the week. I think this was fairly topical when we were talking about this earlier on, but it's probably died a death since then. Nobody gives a shit. But I think there's a larger point to have when we have this discussion around this. So go on.
Yeah, we've been full on Liverpool, haven't we? I mean, but this is Pochettino's reign coming to an end at PSG. Look, he won a league title in France last season, but that job is just kind of turned into a bit of a poison chalice right now. I mean, it's where managers kind of seem to spectacularly fail, certainly by the standards that PSG are sort of holding themselves to now. It was crazy, really, watching some of their games, catching some of their games at the back end of last season, where they were literally being booed by their own fans as they were sort of absolutely walking the league, and even on the night that they were clinching the league, there was very little joy in it. And he's obviously there's only one thing now that club wants, and it's the Champions League, and that exit against Real Madrid just absolutely soured everything. Who knows? Like the way he's kind of zigzagged around Manchester United, hasn't he? I mean, I still think they would have resurrected themselves far more effectively if they would have got Poch in there personally, as opposed to some of the other, going through Ole and the other fella who appeared. Did I see him appear for Austria on the sideline out of nowhere the other night? He's gone to manage Austria.
Yeah.
Ralf Rangnick, I seen a funny, just on a side note on that, I seen a funny comment on Twitter today, which said basically he was glad that when Klopp was in Ralf's classes, he was glad that he was busy studying other managers instead, which I thought was quite funny. But Pochettino, it'd be interesting where he lands next. I mean, I guess everyone will now be assuming that he does maybe come to England, but he just seems to be mistiming things with his availability. I mean, there's an argument to be said, you know, he'd probably fit the profile of, say, Newcastle over the next few years, given what they're going to be looking to achieve. But obviously Eddie Howe's in situ and he's done a good job, so it'll be very harsh to sort of to oust him. I suppose Everton, in theory, if Lampard does what we expect him to do in the first half of the season and get the sack, it's going to be interesting to see where he lands. But God help the next manager who goes to PSG. And I think there was some shouts on here recently that maybe it would be Conte now who jumped ship from Spurs and went over to PSG. So that'll be an interesting watch.
Mm. Pete, Pochettino, I've long said, it's a spoofer. Spoofer.
Here he is. Here we go, full on showbiz, baby.
He's a charlatan. He's a spoofer. He's a waffler. He's an average manager at best who got lucky at Tottenham Hotspur. And look where he is now. He's packing his bags with a massive paycheck. Do you know how much money he got? Do you know how much money he got, Pete? I'll tell you how much money he got. He got more money than Haaland's dad did. That's how much money he got, Pete. So, Pochettino for Juventus, Pete. What do you think?
You know, let's go back to Paris. I mean, anyone that takes the Paris job, I don't know why any manager with a reputation, which is why no manager with a real reputation ever takes that job. It's the French are funny when it comes to football. If you want passion for football in France, you have to go to Marseille, Lens, Metz. You have to go to the cities where people actually like football. Parisians don't like football. They like rugby. And it's true. I mean, the rugby is there. They think football is vulgar. So to be quite honest with you, and the only reason anybody takes the Paris job is because it's carte blanche. It's a blank check to go and sign whoever you want or whoever you can attract to PSG and go and have a go at the European Cup. Nobody cares in Paris about winning Ligue 1. They don't care about it. Nobody cares about winning the French Cup because the French Cup. Ligue 1. nobody cares about it. Zinedine Zidane won't take that job. I'd be shocked if he took it because
Zidane, the world league,
because he knows it's a hiding to nothing. There's nothing like when Kylian Mbappe signed another contract for Paris is another just an indication of who he is. Just a money man. That's all it is. He's no ambition about being a football legend. He just wants. I mean, look at the things they reportedly have given to him. Let's not talk about figures. But for me, I mean, Pochettino, you're right, Phil. He went there and he just thought, all the money in the world, I'll spend what I want, and my ego will get it. Instead of going to Manchester United and doing a real job, to be honest, I'm not a fan. I mean, a lot of people thought, oh well, Jose Mourinho will take that job. Jose Mourinho was not—he's a lot of things, but he's not bleeding stupid. He knows that there's no point in going to a place where you can't teach people how to be passionate. Anywhere he's been, people have been passionate about football. Manchester, Inter Milan. I mean, the night he won the Champions League, took his medal off and walked away was probably, as much as I don't like Inter and I didn't like him for it, it was one of the most passionate things I've ever seen. You'll never repeat that in Paris, even if you won the bloody thing, because nobody cares about it. So Pochettino, I agree with you, Phil. For me, he's a myth. And not just because he's won nothing, and I don't regard winning the French Championship as winning something, but because, I don't know, you know, anyone can get. Tottenham Hotspur have played fancy football for decades and won very little. You know, the last winner, you know, serial winner to manage Tottenham Hotspur was Bill Nicholson. And, you know, that was when football was in black and white, to be quite honest with you. So for me, you know, I like Tottenham Hotspur, but they don't have the divine right to win anything. If they want to be a shoe-in for the top four, they'll bring Pochettino back. But that's about it. I don't think Pochettino is going to convert anybody. He's not going to go into Manchester United and bring that culture that they think that they have the divine right to have back. You know, I think all of the Manchester United have spent billions trying to, you know, play the United way and engender the United DNA. It's all garbage. You know, they'd be probably better off going up to Aberdeen or Glasgow and getting somebody, you know, from a working class background and doing it the way they did it before, if that's possible. But all of these, let's get this magician from Argentina, let's get this other magician, that's all rubbish. So for me, yeah, Pochettino will go to Juventus probably and they'll play nice, fancy Dan football. But Juventus will do what Juventus will do and they'll win Serie A. They won't win the Champions League.
So I think the most important thing that we learned today is that there's big clubs in the world and then there's rich clubs in the world, right?
Yeah.
I think and Pochettino is a prime example of the big clubs in the world and the rich clubs in the world, right? Haaland, we mentioned at the top of the show when Pete was going on about make-up figures and giving out about people make up figures and then using make-up figures to prove his point about make-up figures. But Haaland and Pochettino are classic examples of why rich clubs are eventually going to stop being rich clubs, because no matter what they do, they are utterly irrelevant, right? The football story today was that Darwin Núñez was signing for Liverpool Football Club, who are a big historic club. It was Marcelo was retiring from Real Madrid. Real Madrid, a big historic club. These were the key footballing stories that were going on about the world today. It wasn't Haaland signing for Manchester City is basically it's the strangest signing because they waited so long to announce him. They announce him on the same day that the Núñez deal gets signed and nobody's paying a blind bit of attention to the fact that they've signed him. Despite all the talk for the best part of 5 to 6 months has been where was Alf Inge Haaland going to go, right? So, and look, he's gone there. Who knows? Who cares? Nobody's paying any attention. No, literally nobody's paying attention. They even dressed him in a West Ham jersey to see if anybody noticed and nobody noticed. I'm being honest. I'm being 100% honest here when it comes to it. So when it boils back to this, Pochettino is the classic example of what this is rich club versus big club. And as much as PSG have done an incredible commercial sales pitch by using the Jordan brand and using the Jordan label to become a fashion brand, okay? I'm calling them a fashion brand now as opposed to a football team. They aren't a big club. They never will be a big club. They can sign whoever they like, but they will never be relevant. They will never, ever be relevant in what's going on because City's the exact same. We go and lose a Champions League final and nobody has been talking about the fact that they've won 100 leagues in a row. Nobody's been talking about them. Nobody has literally been talking about Manchester City and what happened this season, despite what they had to do to win the league ahead of us, right? Honestly. And this is why managers, players need to learn the lessons. You can go and take the money and take the money. Do what Carrasco did when he was at Atletico Madrid. He went off to China and took 400 million euro in the space of 2 seasons and then came back, bankrupted the Chinese league and came back to and played for Atletico Madrid. Like it never happened. It was like one of those things. It was like Bobby Ewan in Dallas. He just woke up one day and it was all a dream and he was back in Madrid. It was like, this is fantastic, right? But ultimately, when it comes down to it, big clubs make news and rich clubs are secondary headlines when there's nothing else to write about. And that's what this is. Pochettino should be big news. It's not. There's not even people are talking about, well, it's a Dan, but it could be Mourinho or whatever it is. Nobody cares. Nobody gives a damn. Nobody cares about what's going on in that club or what's happening in that club outside of people who need to write column inches at some stage over the summertime when it gets really quiet as we head into the dead zone in terms of news and stuff like this. So ultimately, that's what it is. And I think Aunt Dicko pointed out the bigger story tonight is the fact that PowerShift FC is on the verge of being sold to an imaginary group that has Peter Kenyon wants to buy PowerShift FC despite being funded by a bloke who has a net worth of 4.5 million. So that is just phenomenal stuff. They had your man, the Pokemon fella, Mo Sheary, coming out saying that they put 4 posts into the sea. Who knows? Underwater.
Not verifiable.
Not verifiable unless you've got it.
Hopefully it's funded by crypto.
Crypto is funded by Subcoin. What's going on there?
God bless everybody. God love.
I know. But that's it. So I think it was a great topic, Ray, to finish on, because ultimately it ties everything together that rich clubs are irrelevant no matter what they do. No matter what they do, and big clubs will always be relevant. And that's why the European Super League needs to push on. And if they win their court case soon, we could have a European Super League to talk about, and that would be great for the whole summer time.
We're in showbiz, baby.
We are indeed. Right, we're on to the random part. So there's been a few things. So Alan, let me do something very quickly before, because it'll cover off what we're going to do. You've all been asked about the headband, because obviously normally I have my beautiful locks of hair on show every week instead of this headband. Why have I got the headband on? This says Gale Force Connemara, right? I'm running that on July 23rd. It's 32.5 kilometers of an adventure race. There's a run up a mountain and down a mountain, and then I cycle around the mountain and then a canoe in between the mountains. Right? And why am I doing it? Because basically we haven't hit our target yet for Felicon. So what I want people to do out there, right? And if they can, especially ones who have loads of money, anyone that's listening from a rich club, yeah, who's got loads of money and he's have nothing left to do with it, right? What I want is I'm going to try raise 100 kilometer for each kilometer, 100 euro for each kilometer I do, which is 22, which is 3,250 euro, which more or less Gav very close to his 10 grand goal, right? But I'm not doing, there's no new links, there's no new sponsor cards, there's no nothing, right? It's going to be that Felicon link. And I just want, where if people can, just go in and donate the money, right? I'm going to hit up everybody. That's why I'm going to wear this headband tonight. And I'm using the wrong finger. There we go. This headband tonight. And then I'll find other things to wear over the next couple of weeks until I run it. But I want the money. I want the money for Felicon. It's too good of a charity for us not to get them over the line. It's too good for what the lads have done with the golfing. And it's too important for lots of people out there that we help these. So until you get me there, until we get that money up, I am going to wear headbands and stuff, anything I can find, wigs. I don't really care, right? I'll wear anything on at this stage, but that's what I want to do, and that's what I'm doing. So July 23rd, that's when I'm doing my bit for what the lads have done after the fantastic golf piece that's coming on. And yes, Tom Boland, I do sing when I'm running up the hill, and I do sing along to Kate Bush, and I'll sing along. I'll take a video record, I'll do videos, and I'll put them up here if we have to as well. I don't care. I'm willing to embarrass myself on this beautiful medium for good causes, and that's what it's there to do. And then, of course, I also want to say to everyone else that's out there, Gav, I'll do the IP Vanish thing at the end of this, but I just want to put that across. That's why I'm wearing the studio, wearing up the mountain today. So enjoyed it, and I've washed it, and it smells lovely. It smells really nice. It has pine needles and everything sticking out the back of it, because I accidentally got lost on the run, and I ended up trying to find my way back down. I ended up running down a mountain bike track instead of an actual pathway. And that was fun, because it's definitely different running down as opposed to cycling down. Anyway, that's been where we are. So anyway, updates. World Games starts on the 7th of July. We're almost there, right? So two sports I want to discuss tonight. Dick, I want to see if you can figure these out, right? This is what it is. I want you to imagine what this is. It's Frisbee, but it's Frisbee with teams, okay? It's Frisbee with teams. And it's I can't remember the name. It's disc ball. That's what it is, right? So basically, you get 2 7-a-side teams on a football pitch, and the lads have to throw the Frisbee into the end zone, and somebody has to catch it in the end zone. Very simple, but it's absolutely amazing. I've been standing there watching it for about 4 hours, watching these games and getting engulfed in the thing. Mixed teams as well, men and women in the teams. So it's not a sexist sport. So I'm assuming it's open to all, whatever you want to identify with, because there's no rules on who can and can't go into it. So that's great as well. So it's an all inclusive sport in terms of this.
Disc ball.
That's Gav from heaven. Hi Gav. Am I doing a good job, boss?
I fucking adore the World Games, I really do.
So it's a 7-on-7, and they're throwing a frisbee like it's American football, for example, and you've got to compete to catch it in a specific area, yeah, in an end zone type.
The trick is, when you catch it though, you can't run with it or anything like that, right? You have to catch it in the end zone. Do you know what I mean? So when you throw it, so I also throw it to Pete. Now Pete, if he caught it, he couldn't move. He has to stand there and then
advance.
He has to throw.
He couldn't advance the frisbee.
Yeah, you can't move with the frisbee.
Is there any VAR?
I don't know. I mentioned earlier on with the VAR, it's going to be a bit of a pain in the arse for Darwin Núñez and his feet, because he's going to be off. He's going to have to start in the halfway line and have the lads on the 18-yard line. That's the biggest feat. Anyway, I think my internet's gone funny. I think I'm.
Yeah, you've downgraded, have you, Phil?
Yeah, I've downgraded. It's the headband. Anyway. Right, so that's frisbee. The other part is dance sport. Dance sport. This is, and that's the name. I was like, what's dance sport? So dance sport is essentially Strictly Come Dancing with medals, right? So they have ballroom dancing, but they also have, and this is for Andy, because I remember Andy telling us a story years ago in the bunker, and I can't remember if it was on the pod or not, but there's a breakdancing competition as well in it, right? And that's what I've watching it, and the lads do, but they have like, it's not just a random breakdancing, you have to have a dance off. So the joy upon joys. I cannot wait until the war games start. I'm so hyped up for it. It's the best thing in the whole world. It's better than anything that you can sport. I'll do dance sport. If you get me over the €3,250 mark, I'll do dance sport live on the podcast someday. Right? I'll do a warm. There you go.
Two-stepping. That's about it.
Red Steve, you said throwing a frisbee and not running, I could be a sportsman. You have to run to get into position. You can't just stand there, right?
Playing statues.
Red Steve thinks he's the Jan Molby of frisbee. Just going to stand in the middle. But how's he going to catch it? You know what I mean? Give the ball to him. Do you reckon Thiago would be quality of frisbee?
He kicks it like a frisbee. Legendary.
Alisson would. He'd be quality at the frisbee as well. So that's it. Lads, anything else you want to bring up on winners and losers this week?
Fixtures out on Thursday.
I thought it came out today.
No, Thursday. Well, there was leaks today, which I would not trust at all. If you're thinking of booking any trips on the back of those so-called leaked fixtures today, I think you'll be sadly disappointed. There was, back to the American football, there was an account set up there, which was, I think it was called something like NFL Fixture Leaks. Mm. It managed to get 10,000 followers in a very quick space of time. It was leaking individual fixtures, which were completely made up, you know, saying this is going to be a game on Thanksgiving Day and such and such. And, you know, people are actually booking flights and stuff off the back of this fake account. And then obviously the fixtures come out and it's an absolute steam and pile of shit. So just a word of warning, if you're thinking of booking your Ryanair flights off the back of these fixtures, that, I mean, there's even a full set of fixtures on an international weekend. So if that doesn't give the game away, I don't know what will.
Yeah, exactly.
Listen, they probably were the real fixtures, and they've leaked, and bollocks, we'll have to hit the computer button again. You know the randomizer.
Yeah, hit the randomizer.
Yeah. Do you ever see the length of time they take to make the NFL? Because like, and they don't do programs like this in the Premier League, and it's a shame, right? But the whole documentary on how they come up with the season's fixtures. Now, remember, this is a league that each team knows who they're playing about 3 years in advance. So it's not like they don't know. It's just the order that they're playing the teams in. Like, it's literally just the order that people employed full time to come up with different versions of the fixture list, right?
Eastern Conference, all that. Yeah.
And then Roger Goodell comes down and goes, let's have a look. Man has put a huge board in front, not a computer, a huge board in front of him going, what do you think? Almost there. Just try it again, right? Yeah. Goes back off, and he's doing the whole thing. I was just thinking, you just know, Roger Goodell has come down loads of times. He's never looked at those fixtures, and he says, if I tell him straight away, you've got that nailed, right? Yeah, he's not going to believe me. Think there's something wrong. So he's just saying three or four times, I like that combination. Keep that combination, but just try to do something over here again, and that's what it is. I'd love to do it in the Premier League, and do it. Right, and then do it with the television cameras on. Imagine the amount of fixes and stuff that would go up. It'd be immense.
There would never be a day like it if there was a documentary on how the fixtures were kind of decided, and if there was some like last minute swap arounds. And oh my god, there'd be absolute uproar. It would be absolutely, it'd be brilliant. But
the madness of that, Pete, is that we don't want, like, you want the fixtures to be spread out well, and you want like weekends where there's lots of really top matches on, right? But then getting that, you have to accept there's going to be weekends where it's Burnley versus Brighton, and it's Haversham versus West Brom, whoever's in the Premier League next year, who knows, right? Then it's Middlesbrough against Terry Venables, and you have those fixture weekends, right, where you go, this is like, and then sometimes throw up deadly games. So it's just like, for me anyway, I don't think it's the same teams. You're going to play them twice over the course of the season. So unless they open the season with you playing the top six from last year or the top seven from last year or whatever it is, all away from home, like, it's, you're going to end up getting them in some form or some pattern. Like, it doesn't really make a difference. I suppose the only bit of the season that really has any real bearing is the run-in. So if you take that run of games from April through to the end of May, right, and that period over the Christmas time, and that's not there this year because the World Cup is on.
Yeah, it's going to break it all up. Yeah, it's going to be. Yeah, I mean, look, home game first would be nice just to get us back on it in the swing of things. And as you say, the thing you look at is your first game, your last game, where the derby is, where Man United is. And I suppose now we have to look at where Manchester City is, but it's never the fair. That's the funny thing. You're going back to your point about these clubs that are not the famous clubs, the almost irrelevant. I mean, how many people will be looking to see when Man City are on their fixture list first? No one.
Liverpool at Anfield is the first one you'll look for. Liverpool.
Teams won't even know when they're playing Manchester City this year because I told you they're all dressed up as West Ham. Which is a West Ham 1994 jersey. It's awful. It's hilarious. It's like a knocked off Oasis t-shirt. Remember the blue Oasis t-shirt from 1997, right? That's what the jerseys look like. It's a terrible looking thing with West Ham next. They'll be playing and they make up some name. Do you remember West Ham changed the name of Upton Park to the Anne Boleyn Ground for the last 3 weeks? And kept referring to the Anne Boleyn, and everyone's like, Where are they talking about? It's Upton Park. It's been Upton Park for the last 100,000 years, right? Who's Anne Boleyn? Like, the last time we saw Anne Boleyn, we were watching The Tudors on BBC Two. Like, it's not real. This isn't real. So what will they call? Where did Manchester City play? Who cares? No one cares. That's the problem. They're not a big side. Even West Ham's a bigger side than them. They make up teams for things. World Cup and Qatar piffed. No one the FA would be forced to play a game short of the World Cup. Grant! Because we've got loads of players not going because they didn't qualify. That was an order from Klopp as well. It was brilliant. Don't turn up and don't
fail. Fail at that stupid, irrelevant international game. Fail.
Love it. Although keep an eye out for Michael Obafemi. He's the next, he could be the next Sadio Mane down there at Southampton. With an absolute thunder rocket.
Tony Yeboah rocket at the weekend, Phil. No?
Against Craig Gordon Craig in goal for Scotland. It was an impressive goal at the end of the day. And it was an impressive appearance by him, and he also did a lovely little chipped pass into some other player, and and it was a very Mane like pass from the end of the season as well. So I'm just throwing it out there because it's the first time I watched an international match in donkeys because I was trying to entertain children. So that's it. That's been the show. Don't forget to use IP Vanish. They're 4.5 out of 5 on the Google reviews. Use the code that Gav gives out on all the other shows. Maybe Gav will just say what the code is, and you get a discount. And they're the best IP Vanish people around. And IP Vanish at ipvanish.com. It is, of course, IP Vanish. I'm really going to
That's show business.
That's show business, baby.
We're in showbiz, baby.
That's been your show. Good night. God bless. I'm Phil. That's Pete. That's Dicko. We're out of here. Sports Social Podcast Network.